Started. It looks like I've got to advertise the Ask the Experts for you. I hope everyone's planning to attend that. I'm going to be there. And so that's following this session at 6:30 tonight in Hall 5, where we go for all the other breaks. So they decided to put that in the front of my talk, so I guess I need to show it for you. All right, so we're ready to get started. My name is Paul Andrew, and this is Office 365 Network Topology and Performance Planning. And we're going to be talking about how you connect from your users to Office 365. And we'll look at how you connect to different services and some of the things that are in between there. All right. So we're going to be looking at some of the Microsoft infrastructure that we have first. We'll be talking a little bit about how our data centers are set up and how your network connectivity connects to those. We're going to talk about a few things that our engineering teams have been doing recently to help to improve performance. We actually have dedicated teams working on performance in each of the workloads, so I'll share a little bit about what some of those things have been going on. We'll talk quite a lot about capacity planning in this talk, thinking about how you should connect your various locations to the Microsoft network and what options you have there and how you have to figure that out. And then we'll talk a little bit about troubleshooting. But actually, in this talk, I'm going to focus on the procedure for troubleshooting and how you set yourself up for troubleshooting. Tomorrow morning at 10:15, we have another talk which carries on and focuses on the troubleshooting aspects. And we'll overlap just a wee bit, but not very much, with this talk. But we'll primarily talk to you about how you can go about troubleshooting and running tests for troubleshooting various performance issues. So let's get right into it. Talking about Microsoft's data centers and Microsoft's experience with building data centers. Microsoft has been building data centers for a long time. There's a lot of experience, a lot of history there, and we do have a lot of equipment that we've put into data centers, a lot of research, and a lot of generations of data centers that have been worked on. Company has invested over $15 billion in infrastructure. We have 100 data centers across the globe, there is a significant amount of investment gone in there. It's something I'd argue that if you were to set up and try and replicate one of these data centers and replicate the networking behind it, even just the networking behind it, it's a very, very difficult thing to do. And so being able to make use of that is a big value of using Office 365. The network that connects our data centers, Microsoft has a private network that connects between each of our data centers and also connects to public internet peering points in 23 countries. And that network is one of the top three networks for traffic in the world. And when I say one of the top three, you know, there are a couple of other large networks out there, but number four and number five are a long way behind in terms of the traffic that goes through the network. Microsoft has such a large network originally because we had the Windows update servers and people were downloading updates for patching Windows and doing things like that. And of course, we have our Bing search engine running over that network as well. And so this is the same network which is managed by Microsoft, which is used by customers to connect to Office 365. And so what you'll do is when you're a user using Office 365, you connect over the internet, but actually you just connect over the internet to the first internet point of presence in one of those 23 countries where the Microsoft network is located. And after that time, you're on our network with a capacity that we make sure is available and routing that gets you to our data centers as fast as possible. So it's a big advantage there. We have connections with 1,500 ISPs. Which are either physical connections or routing agreements with them. Our data centers support a large number of companies and a large number of online services. Office 365 is currently sold in 131 markets. That largely translates as countries, 43 languages and 25 currencies. So here's a picture showing where some of our data centers are. And the data centers in orange are data centers where Office 365 services are located. And you can see we have some other data centers that we're not using for Office 365 right now as well. And if you look at these data centers, I of course see the different regions where we run service out of. You can see the US region there, Quincy, Chicago, Boydton, Des Moines, and San Antonio. That's our North American region. So if you're in the United States and you're creating a tenant, your service is going to be hosted out of those data centers. In Europe here, we have data centers in Dublin and in Amsterdam. We have multiple data centers in each of those cities. And so if you create a tenant here in Spain, you're going to be creating that tenant in those two data centers. We actually have the data in both of those data centers because both for SharePoint and Exchange and also for Link, the data is replicated between the different data centers. So Dublin and Amsterdam is what we're using if you create a tenant here. Where your tenant is created is entirely based on the billing country that you enter when you sign up for service. So we look at the billing country and we do a lookup and we decide where is the best place to host that tenant. You can, of course, have users anywhere across the world and they'll be able to take advantage of Microsoft's network after they connect from the internet to that network to be able to get to their data centers. But your tenant, where your data is stored, where your data is at rest, where your emails are, is going to be in the data centers. For Europe, it'll be in Dublin and Amsterdam. We also have a region for APAC, which is Singapore, Singapore and Hong Kong. So users who have a country in Asia Pacific will be located in those data centers. And then we have another region which is run by a partner, 21V, which is run out of China, and we have data centers there in Beijing and Shanghai. Oh, the last one we have, we do have a South America region, which is just for Brazil. If your country is Brazil, then we will replicate your data between Brazil and San Antonio. We use those two data centers for customers in Brazil. All right, so 100 plus data centers, a million plus servers, and Office 365 running out of all of those. Let's talk a little bit more about our data centers and the network that we have. I mentioned already that we have peering agreements with 1,500 ISPs or network operators. We'll take a bit more of a look at that in a minute. That actually translates to 50 points of presence. We have over 50 connection points where the Microsoft network, we have a fiber connection into a switch where other network operators can connect. That is 50 points of presence in 23 countries, I should add. So a number of those countries have multiple of them. You can read some statistics about the amount of networking gear that we have there as well. And there's a few other details that are interesting here. Over 4,000 BGP connections. BGP is, of course, the routing protocol used on the internet, and we use that just like everyone else, connecting to those network operators that we connect to. You can see a little bit of the growth of network devices, literally routers and switches that we have on our network, it's growing pretty steadily there. And a lot of that is due to the increase in customer demand for Office 365 as we've had to scale out. All right. So there's another network that I want to tell you about, and this is getting a little bit more interesting now. I showed you the network of where our data centers are, and our data centers are where we store data at rest. It's where we actually have a SQL server and a SharePoint server and an Exchange server. We also have an edge network, and our edge network is not used for storing data at rest, but it helps pretty significantly improve performance of connecting to those servers and those data centers. So our edge network is much more significant than our data center network. It's literally where we have a rack that's hosted in a facility. It's not a Microsoft facility. We have an agreement with the owner of the facility, and we have a rack. And so we've got a few servers in there. I don't know, maybe 10 racks. But these edge nodes are where you can connect to Microsoft services before it gets to the data centers. We use this edge network for caching Bing search indexes so that you can get faster performance for doing search. We use this this edge network for the Microsoft download service if you're getting your updates from Windows Update or you're downloading your files from the Microsoft Download Center. We have caches of all that data on these edge nodes as well. So Office 365 has started using this edge network. However, in Office 365, we have some certain compliance requirements because of agreements that we have with you, our customers, about how we will handle the data. And so we have compliance requirements Like one of them is we do require those server racks to be locked. We require there to be video monitoring in the facility where those server racks are housed. And we have to work to make sure that those, these are obviously not required if we're just caching some download servers. There's a lower requirement for compliance if that's all we're doing. We're caching public documents that anyone can download from Microsoft from anywhere. So we have met those compliance requirements in these 22 locations so far. Much larger list of locations where we have these edge nodes, but we'll have to work through and add those compliance things. So the green circles represent where the Microsoft Edge is live now for the Office 365 portal. This Edge project is something that's pretty recent. We've just been working on it this year. And so far, we've deployed the Office 365 portal. Anyway, you guys are familiar with the Office 365 portal, admin portal, all that stuff. So what we haven't done is we haven't been able to take advantage of this Edge network for SharePoint Online, OneDrive for Business, Exchange. There's obviously still some work to do here, but this is a pretty significant project that's going on, which you can see some evidence of now if you connect to the portal and take a look at it. So what does this Edge network actually do? I said it doesn't cache data at rest. So you might immediately think, oh, you can't get to my data, I've still got to go to the data center anyway. Well, actually, the Edge network is a pretty significant increase in performance, and here's why. When you're doing TCP protocol connectivity, and I don't want to teach you about TCP protocol connectivity right now, but I do want to talk to you a little bit about how it is impacted by network latency. And so TCP protocol has this thing called a SYN packet where you synchronize and then an ACK packet comes back. And the SYN literally has to go from the client to the server where the TCP connection is terminated, and then the ACK has to come all the way back. And that is impacted by the network round trip or the latency. Now, actually to set up a connection, because we're using a secure connection now, you have to do quite a number of these round trips. You can see 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then a final ACK, which can be included in your GET. So you've got 6 round trips before you can start sending a request. So 6 times whatever your network latency is, this starts to become significant. And if you add in the requirement to do that at the end of your connection as well, and the fact that oftentimes you're making a connection, then you're dropping it, then you're making another one, then you're dropping it. All of these can have an impact on the time that it takes to actually do real work. So, you know, if you're downloading, if this request is actually downloading a 20 megabyte file, then 6 times whatever your round trip is really doesn't matter. If you've got 6 times 100 milliseconds or 200 milliseconds, it's neither here nor there compared to the time required for downloading a very large file. So it shouldn't matter, but it does. TCP connection times impact the TCP flow control and the way that you can get those ACK packets back. Another thing that impacts the higher level protocols is jitter. Jitter in the time of that latency. Because the way TCP works is it expects an ACK to come back from a packet that it sent in about the same time every time. If you've got 100 millisecond latency from your client to the server, then it's expected to be 100 milliseconds all the time. And what it uses that for is if the ACK takes more than 100 milliseconds to come back, say it takes 150 milliseconds, then we assume at the client that the packet was dropped because it doesn't come back fast enough. So this causes a problem. This is going to cause contention. We're going to resend the data, all this kind of stuff. And if you have jitter on the line where your round trip time actually gets longer and shorter, as can happen when you have very long network connectivity across the internet, across multiple countries, multiple regions, then what you're going to see as a result is counts of dropped packets. So actually this edge connectivity, by shortening the connection, the original TCP connection, makes a pretty significant difference to performance. We'll have to wait and see as we roll out some of those other services, but it's been very interesting to watch that in the Office portal. All right, so let's talk a little bit about the internet and internet network peering. So I mentioned some of these stats already before. What I want to talk about a little bit more is that actually this peering database is public and it's online. So you can go and take a look at where the Microsoft network, which is network number 8075, that's the ASN for the Microsoft network. You can go and take a look at where Microsoft is peered with at this peeringdb.com. And you can look up the locations where we have pairing and the other companies that we have pairing with. Now, how can you use this? You can use this by thinking about the locations where your users connect from and looking at what is the ISP that you're using and what are the network operators that actually peer with the Microsoft network. And by doing this, you can get a picture of your connectivity between your clients and our servers. Because, of course, as you know, the cloud is not this magical thing that's in the story above us, right? It's just servers somewhere on the internet. And I already told you what countries and cities those servers are in. The only thing we don't disclose there is the actual physical address of our data centers. But you need to look at what is the network connectivity to the Microsoft network. And then the Microsoft network, we have some significant investment in making sure that that network is going to backhaul you back to our servers. All right, so you want to take a look at what those network operators are that you're using. Does it matter if your ISP is not paired with Microsoft? Who thinks it matters? Yeah? Well, it might. It might. You need to know who your ISP is. You should be able to figure that out pretty easily because you're paying the money. You probably also want to know what the network operator is that is paired with the Microsoft network. There actually are not very many ISPs who provide internet service to companies who are paired directly with Microsoft. Most of the network operators that are paired with Microsoft are large networking companies that have networks across the globe or across the country. So you're very likely to be using an ISP that is not paired with Microsoft. So then you might think, well, I need to know what the network operator is that's between me and Microsoft. Well, you probably don't because it's probably okay. But if you're looking at Traceroute and you're looking at the different hops between your clients and the servers and you see some big, strange gaps, that's the time at which you might want to ask your ISP about how they are peered and how they do routing for these IP addresses, which are the Microsoft Cloud and part of Office 365. So it's very valuable to take a look at this. If you happen to be a network operator or an ISP, then you can actually fill in some paperwork and peer with Microsoft. Peering means one of two things. Peering might mean physical peering, which if you are thinking of a fiber switch in a rack with lots and lots of connections in, and each fiber goes out to a different network operator, that would be physical peering, where there's a TCP/IP switch, and we're routing packets back and forward. The other kind of peering is really just logical network peering, because you don't have to have physical peering in order to have network peering. So we handle both of those through these peering arrangements, and they end up being reflected in this peering DB, so you can go and take a look. There's actually some caveats to going and looking up this database, because if you're thinking, hey, I want to go and look up that database and see what countries and what cities are there, I did that. I personally went to PeeringDB and went and copied down all of the countries that show up for the Microsoft network. I did it in July, and these were the cities that I found. It also has, of course, all the network operators that appeared in all of those locations. Now, there are many caveats with looking at this data. One, of course, is that some cities, in fact, lots of cities have multiple peering locations. Sometimes they call these network hotels, where lots of networks come in, lots of data comes in, and lots of data goes out, that sort of thing. The peering locations may be what's called on-net, or they may be off-net. On-net means there's physically a piece of fiber that goes off to the Microsoft network. Off-net, there's not. A peering agreement with a network operator that's off-net means we have routing agreements, but we don't have a physical connectivity agreement. You won't see that in PeeringDB. This information is not largely disclosed. You may be able to uncover some of it through trace routes from your clients, but it's not generally publicly advertised. Also, the data is absolutely subject to change. Microsoft is always looking to try and increase network connectivity, to change routes that we use, to recover from broken cables that happen surprisingly more often than you think across the internet. And so a lot of this means that although I grabbed this in July, it is probably wildly out of date. And staying up to date with it is pretty tricky. What you want to do is you want to use this information to your advantage when you have a problem. If you have a problem with your performance and the internet's just not performing for you, you're looking for options. And so this is a great tool to go and take a look at and see, is there an option here? Can I talk to my ISP about their connectivity to the Microsoft network? You've got all our IP addresses. You've got all of our networks. You know what cities they're located in. You can have a great conversation with your ISP if you're seeing a problem that may be located there. All right, so let's change gears now a bit. One of the best ways to improve performance with Office 365 is to use our rich clients and make sure they're configured correctly. So I'll talk a little bit about this later. But Office 365, of course, has a whole variety of different clients, and many of them support offline synchronization. And so offline synchronization is the greatest way to solve a user's performance issue because it means they're not reliant on their client being online all of the time. And this is a great advantage that Microsoft has. Even in our Outlook Web Access, which runs in HTML, you can set that to run in offline mode and it will synchronize data to your local PC for your email, just like Outlook will. Outlook and OneDrive for Business Sync are those other clients there. Even our mobile clients, they all offline sync as well. So this is the greatest way that you can solve a performance problem for a user, is you can make sure that they are using offline settings correctly. All right, so we've talked through a little bit about connectivity from Microsoft data centers through the Microsoft network, use of edge nodes and other things through to the client applications. I think it's worthwhile just taking a look at that because so often we see this picture of the cloud, this purple cloud up here. I know we use it on a lot of our marketing slides. And then you see the PCs underneath it, and the PCs connect to the cloud. Now, you've all showed up in my talk, so you guys all know that that is not how the internet works. The internet is really a series of different networks that are connected together and have peering agreements with each other. And at some point, an internet service provider will give a server access to that group of networks, and at some point, a user will have access to that same thing. In between all of those things, Microsoft has a global network which connects to the internet all over the world. We have our edge nodes, which we are building out and starting to use, of course, for the Office 365 portal. The way that you do peering and routing is very, very important. The internet is not magic. There is a lot of work that goes on in routing packets to and from the servers. And then Microsoft uses various content delivery networks for caching data local to users. We actually use several content delivery networks, including Microsoft's own content delivery network, which is available through Azure. And we use those with SharePoint Online and also with Exchange Online for hosting static files, public data, and those sorts of things. And then a big thing that you need to look at is the customer internet connection, or more importantly, the internet connection at each workplace where you have users. Everywhere that you have users is a potential for either a great connection to the internet or some problems. And a lot of what we look at in troubleshooting is figuring out if the internet connection that you have for your users, whilst it may be tuned well for web browsing, you've recently moved to using SaaS applications, there are different ways that you have to tune those. So a lot of the troubleshooting that we have is about figuring out, have you noted these different things that need tuning with your internet connectivity? And I'm not actually going to talk about, spoiler alert, I'm not going to talk about those in this talk. You have to come back tomorrow at 10:15. We have a talk about that. Really what that talk does is go through a lot of those troubleshooting things, some within your network and in other places as well. But there is a lot of things that you will find once you start uncovering those and looking at it, simply because of the difference between using a browser and connecting to a website and rendering a page and using Outlook and connecting to Exchange Online and remaining connected all day. Very, very different ways of connecting to the internet. All right, so I spent a little bit of time there talking about the infrastructure that we have, which is between the Microsoft data centers and the clients. And really this is a primer intended to be an overview for thinking about how you go about planning for that connectivity and how you go about troubleshooting any issues that you might have with that connectivity. Because really when I think about it, performance management with Office 365 is about those two aspects. It's in advance planning how you do that connectivity, and then if you have problems, it's thinking about how do I do this troubleshooting? How do I prepare and figure out what's gone wrong when, for whatever reason, it hasn't gone as we planned? All right, so we're going to talk about those two things coming up in a little bit. Before that, I'll grab a drink. So before we get to that, I want to talk about some of the things that our dev teams have been doing to improve performance for end users of Office 365. Because we do have dedicated teams working out of SharePoint, Exchange, and those workloads, working specifically on looking at end-user performance and figuring out new ways to increase it. Now, one of the first things that they've been working on is making sure that the client applications work really, really well. And so we have the OneDrive for Business sync tool, which runs on your PC and will sync your files down to your PC and changes will be synced back up. It actually synchronizes just the changes that you make in 3.5 megabyte packets back up to the server. It does not sync the whole 10 megabyte file that you're working on while you're typing away and hitting save. However, OneDrive for Business Sync is absolutely the largest user of bandwidth into SharePoint Online. It's phenomenal, the growth of that. With unlimited capacity being added for customers, I'm sure that will only increase. But absolutely, that offline tool is what people are using and how you can get the best availability and performance from that. Our other rich client applications running on mobile devices and also Outlook running on the Windows client are also able to run in cache mode or offline. So a lot of work has gone into these client applications and specifically making sure that they can help to give people the best performance required. Because if you don't have to run online, then you're less dependent on the vagaries and the outages that may happen on the internet, and you don't have to worry so much about that network connectivity, which of course is large and complex and always changing. There's always an undersea cable which is getting broken. So the more you can work offline and deal with those things as they come up, the better. The next one to talk about, and I mentioned this earlier, is that we use AJAX in our web applications where we just request a small part of the page to come back. You're not refreshing the whole page. And we use the offline mode in HTML5. This is not enabled by default, by the way. If you have a user that wants to use this, they want to go in offline, you have to go into the settings for Outlook Web Access and turn this on. Once you do that, you turn that on, you can get an icon on your desktop. It looks a wee bit like Outlook, but it all runs in HTML, and it will cache your mail on your local PC in a secured location. It's not in there just with the browser cache, but it will cache your mail there so that you can go ahead and just run OWA when you're not connected to the internet and work on that offline. So great feature there in Outlook Web Access. All right, some other things that we've been doing much more recently that I wanted to talk about. The Exchange team here has a few things that I can share. The first one is Outlook has been updated to use MAPI over HTTP. Now, this came in Office Client 2013 SP1, and it was set as off by default, and we've been enabling it through the services and the Exchange servers bit by bit. But what this essentially does is, if you remember several years back, we shifted from MAPI over RPC. RPC is just remote procedure calls, which was running over TCP/IP. We shifted from that to RPC over HTTP. So effectively what we were doing is we had the MAPI API layer, the RPC layer, and then we were doing that over HTTP instead of TCP. And that gave you a lot more resiliency because RPC is not a very fault-tolerant protocol. If something goes wrong, RPC is going to have a problem with it. And so putting HTTP underneath that allowed us to get that a lot more solid. But actually, the problem was really that we were using RPC. RPC has been around for a very, very long time. I don't know if anyone was doing networking in the 80s, but it's a very old protocol, and it's kind of not what you want for today's internet. So we have taken that out, and we're now using MAPI, which is the mail API, directly over HTTP. And that is, I'm actually not sure if that's completely rolled out across the services, but if you get Office 2013 SP1, that's what has this in. And it's been a massive amount of work because we actually have a significant amount of users using Outlook and connecting to Exchange Online. And so changing something like the protocol at that low level, which is effectively something you don't see or you don't want to see at all, and making sure that it works in all scenarios for all customers has been a lot of work. And that's kind of the reason why we've been rolling it out slowly over the different tenants. But that's been a big change, which is improving performance pretty substantially. Work has also gone on in the Outlook web app team to increase the load time for the inbox. They measure this load time in two layers. They measure the first load, so the first time you go to Outlook and you load the inbox. And they cache various things. If you're not in offline mode, they don't cache your email, but they cache a lot of other parts of the website that they're using. And then they measure the second load or the cached time to load. And they've been able to reduce the time overall across the world by about a second and a half to 2 seconds for a lot of users. So there's a pretty substantial reduce in the load time for that page. Another thing the Exchange Online team have done is they've built a tool for helping users to take a look at their network connectivity to Exchange Online servers. And so they have this tool, the Exchange Client Performance Analyzer, which is now available from the Office 365 admin portal in the tools section. You can download that and run your local machine. I will actually take a look at that a little bit later in the talk. On the SharePoint team, SharePoint have been doing some network tuning. They have found some improvements in their network tuning that they've been able to do to reduce the file download time for large files. Now this change went into place on around the 1st of October, and I've seen it being reported by some third-party monitoring sites for Office 365. It does only impact certain customer scenarios on specific types of networking. And so this is not something that impacts all users, but it's pretty substantial for very large files for certain types of networking connections. There has been work to enable larger than 2 gigabyte file uploads that's going on. And then the SharePoint Online team has also been working to improve its homepage that you can see there. SharePoint Online has been continuing to make more use of content delivery networks. And another interesting thing they've been doing is moving theme processing from the server to the client. SharePoint themes are a great way to change the customization of your SharePoint site. And by doing that on the client, it means we can take advantage of content delivery network for grabbing images and backgrounds and different things. Processing on the client these days with JavaScript is much faster than doing it on the server and waiting for all those created, constructed elements, images that have been modified to be downloaded. And of course, we talked about the Office 365 admin portal moving to the Microsoft Edge. All right, so a whirlwind tour about some of the things that our teams have been doing. Now, let's take a look at capacity planning and talk about that. So capacity planning is largely about predicting the amount of bandwidth that you're going to need for the users at the site where your users are connecting to the internet, where they're connecting to Office 365. And so we're all about measuring that bandwidth. I want to know before I start onboarding to Office 365, how much bandwidth am I using just without Office 365, just with regular usage? What's my headroom? Headroom is the concept of thinking about how much free capacity do I have with my ISP that I'm not taking advantage of. What's my commit and what's my overage if I go over that? Just understanding where am I at, looking at a few charts over time and seeing what kind of excess you could use. You're likely to have more internet usage when you move to Office 365. It is a cloud service. So knowing how much capacity you have in the first place is the first step to calculating what am I going to need, and am I going to need any kind of increase. And so looking at that capacity, there's some different ways that you can do that. Netmon is a great tool for tracing network usage, and it will trace all network packets that are running through the machine that you're running it on. You can use that to measure the bandwidth use of your clients connected to servers. Perfmon, if you run Perfmon on your Exchange servers, you can go and look at some of the performance counters that indicate how much bandwidth is going through it. And you can also use counters on your networking equipment themselves. Quite often you'll find networking equipment has an admin console you can go in. You can go and get reports about the amount of traffic going through. I think that's the best way to go through and do it. Sometimes these devices will actually tell you how much headroom you've got on your connection as well, and you don't have to go and create the charts and do the math. So looking at that baseline of how much traffic you use right now is one part of it. Baselining is also about baselining how much new usage you're going to put onto that bandwidth when you move to Office 365. And so you want to look at things like your pilot users. If you run a pilot, then that's a great time to measure the increase in bandwidth utilization. If you have 100 users in your pilot, you can look at how much increase you get from those 100 users moving to Office 365. And then if you have, say, 1,000 users in total, if you multiply that difference by 10, then that's a great way to think about that's probably how much bandwidth I'm going to get using. In order to make that work, you've got to make sure your pilot users are really using Office 365, that they have actually migrated from their on-premises use. Otherwise, that's not going to work. If you can't get that in a pilot, you may be able to do it just by looking at usage from your Exchange on-premises servers. You can look at it by usage from your SharePoint on-premises servers. If you are literally migrating a workload from SharePoint on-premises to SharePoint Online, the usage is going to be really similar. The same is true for Exchange and, in fact, Link. So if you can just measure what your usage is on-premises, that's a great way of being able to establish your baseline. You can also take a, see there, we're talking about test mailboxes. Some people do this religiously, create a test mailbox, send a whole lot of mails to it, know how many mails you're doing, try and approximate that to the amount of mails that your users do. This is different in every company. And then use that test mailbox for increasing the bandwidth and monitoring how much bandwidth increase it's used as an alternative to doing a pilot. We also have bandwidth calculators. And the bandwidth calculators, and they're at this URL here, aka.ms/tune. We have bandwidth calculators separately for Exchange and SharePoint and Link. These calculators essentially ask you how many users do you have, what time of the day do they access the services, how much usage do they make of the services each, and it runs some math across those and will tell you how much bandwidth you're going to need. They do so over different times of the day, so they'll ask you what time zones your users are in, what hours they use, and so they're pretty intelligent there, but they are still based on the data that you typed in. And so they won't necessarily give you as good a result as actually going out and measuring a pilot or measuring your current usage. We've actually just published the SharePoint Online calculator. Up until just a few weeks ago, we only had the Exchange and Link ones. So we have all three of those there now. They're at that that landing page there, aka.ms/tune. All right, let's take a look at this in a little more detail, because I know I'm telling you guys go and measure the bandwidth. But what do we actually do? So, Exchange Online, Exchange Online is Exchange servers that we run. We've got CAS servers and we've got Exchange Mailbox servers, and it is very, very similar to Exchange on-premises. See, we've got some notes here. We're gonna recommend you make sure to update to Outlook 2013 SP1. In addition to removing the need for RPC, there are some other improvements there that can make the connectivity and the amount of bandwidth advantageous. There's a direct pointer there to the Exchange bandwidth calculator. And also call out that the latency tolerance with cached mode, if you're running Outlook in cached mode, 325 milliseconds is a long time. You can get a long way across the world, across the internet in that time. And so cached mode in Outlook connecting to Exchange is going to avoid having that server offline come up for your users pretty much in anywhere that they are. The only thing, the server offline, of course, comes up when Outlook is unable to connect to the server for more than about 325 milliseconds. It's going to try and reconnect, so it's going to be okay. But I know you're going to get support calls as soon as that server disconnected comes up on the screen, because that's what the users see. They see that, and then they're going to call and try and get some help. All right, SharePoint Online. SharePoint Online is actually surprisingly even more latency tolerant in terms of the round trip time. Because a lot of SharePoint Online, if you're downloading a document or uploading a document, it's based on the amount of bandwidth that you have available. You may have choke points in your bandwidth at the various network points, but the round trip time of those packets should just impact the start of those that data downloading. So SharePoint is pretty latency tolerant. It's also much harder to calculate a baseline. If you have existing users that are on premises, that's the best way to do it. When we created our calculator, and our calculators are all Excel based, when we created our calculator, it's really tough to figure out, well, how much data is a SharePoint user going to download? Then it depends on how many files they change during the day and how many files they have, what they upload, and that kind of stuff. So we've had a crack at that. We have a good go at it based on an approximate number of files that a user might edit, how much they might edit during a particular day. You can only type so much. After all, you only work on a certain number of files. But it is really tricky to figure out. And so we still would recommend a baseline for figuring that out. let's see. All right, so Link Online is not going to handle latency very much, unless you're just talking about instant messaging and users are not using Link for other functionalities. Audio will run with, I've got 50k kilobits per second or 80 kilobits per second using that RT audio codec that we have. Video is going to require a lot more depending on the camera resolution that you have in, and desktop sharing is going to take even more. There's a big difference in Link Online between whether you have a person-to-person or a peer-to-peer call or sharing or IM and a scheduled or multi-party connection. If you're just connecting peer-to-peer, one user and another user, and it's not scheduled, then the connection is just between those two users' PCs. Link Online will connect directly, and no matter what kind of media you're sharing, it just goes between those users. Have you ever created a peer-to-peer connection and then gone and added in a third person? And you notice Link does a whole bunch of stuff when you do that. It's actually establishing a conference call to the server that you're using for Link Online. So wherever your Link Online servers are, it's going to go and connect to that. And if, like me, my Link Online services are out of the United States, I'm in Europe at the moment. If I have a call with someone who's in APAC, that means we're all connecting into that US-based server, assuming we're using my Link Online server and not someone else. As soon as I go to multi-party, one, two, three of us, or if I have a scheduled call, all of the traffic is going to be going up to the server and back down so that it can be broadcast out. So we have a calculator there for a Link Online. This calculator, again, is linked from that other page that I showed, the aka.ms page. All right, so all this is a lot to think about in terms of, well, how much bandwidth do I actually need? I've been asking people who do these deployments with large customers, and the general rule of thumb that they will talk to you about is if you're already using Exchange and it's on premises, and all you're doing is migrating from Exchange to Exchange Online, and you haven't started using other services, your users will, trust me, but you haven't started, and this is the internet situation that you're planning for, at least start with about 20%. And question if people are telling you you need five times the internet bandwidth. That's going to be relatively unlikely. The amount of internet bandwidth that you're using right now is going to be dependent on the mail that's flowing into your Exchange server, the amount of web browsing and other applications that your users are using that's out on the internet. And so if you think about that and then think about, okay, now our mail is not flowing into our Exchange server, but it's flowing to Exchange Online, and our users, when their Outlook clients connect, are connecting out to Exchange Online, and so they're using more bandwidth. You want to think around 20% as a way of starting for having additional capacity, and then 20% would be the headroom also that you would think about having on that internet connectivity. And so definitely go back and ask questions where people are saying you need five times the internet bandwidth when moving to Office 365. That would be a red flag and certainly cause for looking at a few more calculations. All right, we're going to talk about some options to conserve bandwidth in a minute. before we get there. Actually, I just talked about this already. I was talking about where exchanges compared with your users. So I've got a nice diagram here that shows it. But really what all this is saying is if your clients running Outlook are running inside their offices and your exchange server is also inside your offices, then your SMTP traffic is going to be traversing your firewall, coming in through your internet connectivity point, going to the exchange server, but your Outlook connections are going to be connecting directly over your LAN to the exchange server. And when you move to Office 365, the reverse is true. The exchange server is outside your firewall, but your SMTP traffic doesn't come into your firewall. There are some other scenarios, like if you set up hybrid, then the SMTP point for your mail could be inside your firewall, or it could be Exchange Online. And so if it's inside your firewall, then the SMTP traffic has to come in. And if the user's mailbox is in Exchange Online, that SMTP traffic is going to also go straight back out because it's got to go to the right mailbox server. And then your users are connecting from inside your firewall out in order to access their mailboxes. Does that all make sense? I need a diagram for that as well, don't I? Anyway, you need to think about that and just count those hops in terms of how many hops there are for your SMTP traffic, because all of that is going to factor into the bandwidth that you're going to need and the difference between your clients just connecting to Exchange on-premises and your clients connecting to Exchange in the cloud. Some other considerations about bandwidth to think about. A lot of people do have Exchange on-premises and then they migrate to Exchange Online, they migrate to Office 365. And so migrations are usually a big deal, they're usually a big project. And migrations are something you want to think about. Very simplistically, you're going to look at the size of all the mailboxes and you're going to add them up. And that's how much data you've got to transfer from on-premises to in the cloud. This is pretty logical, pretty straightforward. And so think about, look at how long that takes. Try it with some test mailboxes. Remember that mailbox that you created when you were baselining and you were adding a lot of emails to see how much bandwidth it took up? Use one of those mailboxes. Create one that's on-premises, add a bunch of mail to it, and then migrate it, and then start to do some timings. These timings will be different for your whatever your internet connectivity is. They'll be different for the scenarios that you have that are unique to the organization that you're working with. So it's always worth testing those before you go ahead and start migrating. You'll realistically only be able to get a certain amount of mailboxes migrated each night, and then you want your users to be able to access them during the day. So this is something that some planning is going to be required for, and it is a timed project over time. All right, so I talked about SMTP traffic a little bit, and so I've got some rough calculations there. I mean, thinking about when you have these hybrid scenarios, a migration is really a hybrid scenario in the interim because you're having to set up hybrid in order to migrate your mailboxes. And SMTP traffic is something you've got to calculate in addition to your Outlook connectivity to Exchange. Administration traffic I've also listed there. Office 365 has various types of admin traffic. It, like all of the other traffic that we transfer, is SSL encrypted using HTTPS. Our administrative traffic is not very significant. It's not really going to impact your bandwidth very much. It's going to be proportional to the number of users you have. So if you have 100,000 users, it's going to be more admin traffic than if you just have 1,000 users. But overall, if you do have that 100,000 users, you've got a much larger bandwidth capacity to take care of the bandwidth requirements of those users. And the admin traffic will not be significant or not be noticeable as part of that. The biggest part of the admin traffic is directory synchronization. This runs every 3 hours. The DirSync server has a SQL database on it, which remembers what the snapshot of the users in the cloud is. It looks at your local Active Directory, and it looks for any changes in users or changes in attributes, and it synchronizes those up every 3 hours. So that you should literally think about what kind of changes am I making to my users on premises? How often do I do those? Is there a line outside the door of the person who does it? That data has to be synchronized up to the cloud, and that's done every 3 hours. All right. So let's talk about some observations and ways that you can do this planning. So consider the number of users that you are adding. Consider the growth rates for the amount of content that gets added into SharePoint and the amount of mail that people are adding to their mailboxes. It's worth doing a planning exercise or a calculation on that growth rate. I talked about the headroom already. 50% would be a conservative amount of headroom. 50% means essentially you're managing your internet connectivity so that only half of the bandwidth you're committed for is being used. Maybe consider having a lower CIR and having a peak rate that accommodates that need. But 50% is very conservative. However, I certainly know companies that are setting their headroom to 50%, making sure that whatever users come along, they're going to have bandwidth available. Recommendation to use the mailboxes for your users rather than their archives. If you have archiving set up, archiving is not actually cached in Outlook, and so any connectivity to your Outlook, looking up mails, dragging mails into them, all of that kind of stuff happens off to the Exchange Online server. It's not able to be done on the client. So if you use the mailboxes that you have, that's a better way to go about doing that. Let's see what else. Some other great things here. In terms of conserving bandwidth, you want to take a look at your remote offices and take a look at the topology that you have with those remote offices. Do they have their own internet connections, or do they connect back to the head office where your internet connection is there? Further, do your remote offices have their own DNS connections? Are they doing DNS resolutions through their internet connections, or are they doing DNS resolution through your central office? And how can you figure that out? Working that out up front in planning is much easier than trying to figure it out afterwards. I also wanted to talk. Okay, so I've got a suggestion here to move the MX record for your mail to Office 365. This avoids the double hop that I was mentioning earlier of your mail coming into your on-premises server and then back out to Exchange Online, and then users who are on-premises going connecting to that from Outlook. Of course, this depends on how many of your users have you migrated from on-premises to online, but it's a good best practice to move that as quickly as you can. Pilot impact is going to be negligible. Your pilot impact, of course, is negligible because you're probably only piloting with a few users, a small number of users. The other reason that pilot's impact is negligible is what we typically see with pilots is users do not adopt all of the Office 365 workloads in the pilot, even though you've added the user to the pilot. There is some delay before they will get using it, unless you have physically prevented them from using on-premises environments. Gather counters from the edge. If you have available counters on your firewall or other network connectivity at the edge of your network, where your network, your customer network connects to the internet, you want to monitor the internet bandwidth connectivity there rather than anywhere else. That's going to be the best place to take it because, of course, all of the traffic has to go through there. A lot of people don't do that because it's quite hard to access if you're not actually the network engineer who has access to that equipment. And a lot of this gear is outsourced. So you have to find the right person to be able to access that, but it is well worthwhile. Because as I mentioned, our calculators are there for you to use and they'll give you some help, but they're never going to be as good as just going there and looking at, okay, how much bandwidth are we actually using right now? You may not know exactly what all that bandwidth is being used for in the organization, but if you can see what that bandwidth is and then you can see how it increases when you run your pilot, that's the best way of looking at what you're going to need. All right. I want to move on here and talk a little bit more about the way that clients connect to Office 365 services. So here's an example of a mail user running Outlook. And this is an extract, actually. We have an article about this in TechNet, which describes this in more detail if you want to take a look. What it's showing here is we want to talk to you about where your traffic goes and what your connectivity is like if your users move around. So if you think about the user who is inside of North America, in OAM, and that user is going to connect to Exchange Online, the first thing that Outlook has to do is it's got to look up the DNS for Exchange Online. So it's going to take a look at outlook.office365.com, and it's going to find that outlook.office365.com is surprisingly in North America. And the reason that happens is because we have DNS that points to the location closest to where the user is. And so you're going to connect to the CAS server for Exchange Online, and then that's going to get mail back from the mailbox and pass it back to the user. So let's take a look at what happens if the user is in Europe and they've moved. So the user's moved, but their tenant hasn't. In this case, the DNS is going to say, hey, outlook.office365.com is in Europe. Go and connect to it there in our data centers in Dublin and Amsterdam. And so your CAS server is going to be found in Europe. It's going to know that this user's mailbox is back in the North America data center. So it's got to go and get the data from the mailbox back from there. So some of the processing for Outlook connecting to Exchange Online can be done with that CAS server, but other parts of it cannot. All right, so this gets even more complicated if you have a VPN connection and you're traveling, but you're using a VPN back to your office, because chances are you're going to be doing a DNS lookup from the office that you're VPN connecting into. And then you're going to get the DNS from the previous page, which is going to tell you that your CAS server, the first one you have connect to, is back in North America. And that's going to force you, even though your client is currently in Europe, to connect to the service, which is the CAS service, which is in North America. This is going to not perform quite as well, and it's very, very difficult to figure that out, to see what's going on. So it's worth taking a look at some of that. All right, so just want to talk about a couple more things here. WAN accelerators. There's a lot of companies sell WAN accelerators that work with Office 365, and some people have had good success with them. Some people do not have good success with them. You know, all of the traffic from the client to Office 365 services is SSL encrypted, and so there is some limit to what a WAN accelerator, which typically compresses data or caches data, there is some limit to what that can do. Compression and caching is best done on unencrypted traffic, and now that Office 365 is all encrypted, there are some downsides to those WAN accelerators. I'm certainly hearing that some people are still getting good value from them. We do ask that they be disabled if you have a support call to Microsoft to ask about Office 365. Microsoft doesn't make those WAN accelerators, and we don't know a lot about what they're doing, and so we need them removed from the connection before you can make a support call to Office 365 so that we can debug. So that's on WAN accelerators. If you have firewalls that have lists of IP addresses that users can access because you have policies around things they can access, then we have a page which specifies all of the IP addresses and DNS for Office 365. We do recommend you use DNS filtering instead of IP address filtering, purely because our IP addresses change much more frequently, and it is a little bit of work to keep up with them. All right. So I wanted to get in and talk about our troubleshooting. I mentioned that we have another talk at 10:15 tomorrow morning, and so I'd encourage you to go to that. What I want to talk about in this troubleshooting section is how you can go about planning for your troubleshooting and what is the process that you want to go through to do that. Because what we've found is most of the time, if there is a performance issue connecting from a user to Office 365, there is something you can do either on the client equipment, the customer equipment, or with the ISP that will resolve that performance issue. Microsoft is doing a lot of work on our network and our data centers. They don't get all the way out to all our customers. And so what we find is that just this fine-tuning that you can do for yourselves to make sure that you have systems that are tuned for working with SaaS applications like Office 365, which unfortunately have slightly different parameters and such than regular web browsing that network administrators are familiar with. There is a lot that we find that people can do right off the bat and find that. So how do you go about doing that? So we need some people involved in doing the troubleshooting. You always want to make sure that you can find, and this is surprisingly difficult sometimes, but you need to find the user who's observed the problem. Many times I get calls about performance that customers have problems with Office 365, and they'll say there's an Office 365 performance problem. And I start asking them about it, And I find out that they've never seen this problem, that it's actually, they're a Microsoft person and they've heard it from a partner who's heard it from a customer of the partner with Microsoft, but they don't actually know what it is. They just know that there's an Office 365 performance problem. I can't do anything with that, and neither can you. You can't fix a problem that you can't reproduce and you can't get details on. So you've got to put this on the list. You've got to make sure that you identify the user who has seen the problem. You've also got to find, you've got to know who is your going to be doing your troubleshooting, who's going to be on point for owning that problem end to end and figuring it out. Figuring out the performance problem is a significant amount of work. It's something you've got to commit to, spend some time working on, because, you know, troubleshooting, there's something wrong, you don't know what it is, everything's actually working, it's just a little bit slow. It is a difficult problem to work through. So hopefully with these processes we'll help you. If there are network engineers from the customer, you've got to have them on speed dial. You've got to have people who can access equipment, look up logs and do things with the edge nodes that are inside your DMZ. If you are working just with the IT admins in any large organization, typically they do not have access to any of that networking equipment. So you really want to set up a discussion with those network engineers up front. Also, if Microsoft's involved, you want to find the person with the role technical account manager. These guys are, they work with Microsoft support and they can get the right people involved from Microsoft to work on a problem that a customer is having. So if you have a Microsoft account rep, you want to find the guy with that that title. All right, so what do you do when you're doing performance troubleshooting? So I'm recommending that you do this troubleshooting on site. It is much, much more difficult to do this troubleshooting if you are remote, if you have to be on the phone, or worse, if you have to be on email. I've done this a number of times on email. It's really, really hard to get the right questions answered and make sure that you get the right data back. So absolutely recommend doing that on site. All right, so we talk about two stages for doing this troubleshooting. The first stage, all of this stuff you can do without having a troubleshooting engineer. You can do without having someone on site who is owning the problem and working it through. This is all pretty basic stuff, right? We're talking about learning about the specific details of the problem. Thinking about, are all users impacted or just one user? What time of the day does it happen? What connection points for the network does it happen? Always ask the user, does this happen when you're at home? Most users also access Office 365 when they're at home. When they're at home, they have a different ISP, a different network connection. It's likely to be different. If they have a problem in the office and not at home, this tells you a lot about where to start looking and what kind of problem that they might have. Did the performance change recently? Did it get worse? Or has it always been like this and they've only just decided to call? The second thing you want to figure out is about the customer network topology. Start to get a picture in your head and on paper about where their internet connectivity is and how their connection to Office 365 is set up. The third thing here is you've got to get a repro or a reproduction of the problem. You've got to be able to see and show other people the problem that's happening. You can do this sometimes with a video. You can take a video of the problem and then you can share it around. It's always best to be able to do it by signing into a tenant, knowing what machine you have to do that on. If you need to get remote desktop to that machine because your performance, your people, whoever it is you want to get advice from or show is somewhere else, you've got to be able to show them the problem itself. And then I listed the types of people on the previous slide. Form a V-team of people who are going to be involved in this troubleshooting. If done right, troubleshooting only needs to take a few days, and you can get an action plan together and run through some of the troubleshooting steps that we'll be showing tomorrow morning. It should only take you a couple of days to find, aha, there's the thing. I can change this configuration. I can update these clients. I can change my network here and figure it out, and then you've got some work to do. From experience, I know that these troubleshooting exercises can take months and months, if not a year or more. And the reason that happens is, you know, not starting up front and figuring out, following through some of these steps and learning what exactly is the problem, what is my issue, who's going to help me solve it, and treating it seriously. Unfortunately, because they are complex, it does take some effort to figure out. All right, stage two. So stage two, we're going to take a look at primarily tomorrow. So I've just got some brief notes about this. Stage two starts about running some basic tests. Basic tests are going to be doing something like a trace route and an SS lookup. We'll have a look at a couple of those in a minute. Really, really basic stuff of just figuring out where the client is in relation to the server and what kind of networks you're connecting through. Once you've done some basic tests and maybe some of the more advanced tests which can be tried out, you'll start to form a hypothesis. I think there might be an issue in this part of the network or in this client or whatever it is. These types of packets don't appear to be going through. I think there might be an issue with this piece of equipment which is in between the data centers and the client. So form a hypothesis, and then you're going to run more tests to prove the hypothesis. Typically, the more tests involve taking out the thing that you think is causing the problem and seeing if the problem still happens, or running the test on the other side of whatever that thing is. If you can bypass the thing which is part of your hypothesis, then you can confirm, and then you can try your repro again, and if your performance problem is solved, you've got it. You know what you have to do. All right, so then you can recommend the action to improve the performance, and you're good. All right. So we have to come back tomorrow to take a look at some of those. I wanted to show you like the first step of that, though, which is figuring out where Office 365 is for your location. So doing that, we're going to be looking for the network endpoints which represent Exchange Online, SharePoint Online, and Link Online. And so when you're doing this, please bear in mind that these network endpoints might get moved by Microsoft. We have data centers in Dublin and Amsterdam, which are accessed here. We actually have multiple data centers in each of those cities. Now, how your tenant is accessed and how it is accessed for each of our workloads may be moved between those different cities based on operational requirements that Microsoft has. So you may find at one point you have all three of your workloads are in Amsterdam, and then one of them might get moved to Dublin. And these moves will appear seamless to you for your connectivity unless you are running a trace route or you're relying on the specific IP address where your service is hosted. So try not to rely on that, but do use it for troubleshooting. All right. So I want to show you a couple of things here. I've got a few trace routes that I've predefined. I don't want to have you guys wait watching Traceroute. Okay, so here's a Traceroute to a tenant that I have. This tenant was created with an address in the United States. The tenant is called Paul20. And you can see when I do the Traceroute, it points me to this node prodnet 17, which is actually the SharePoint farm where my tenant is located. And I did this Traceroute from here. And so you can see these IP addresses, which are part of probably the internal network of the convention center. And I suspect that because typically a place like a convention center doesn't bother to have DNS set up for internal IP addresses. So we're probably seeing the first external node at this location here. I'm not familiar with what that is. It is probably the network operator or ISP used by the convention center. And then we're connected to this thing, microsoft.mixit.net. Not actually sure what that is, but I do know this one. I recognize ntwk.msn.net. That's a Microsoft public network node. So this is part of that network. It looks like FRA. There's probably a node in France that I've connected to. And so from France, it looks like I'm probably connected to Amsterdam. And then you can sort of see progressing through the Microsoft network. I can see this jump from 34 milliseconds to 113. Because I know my tenant is in the United States, I'm going to assume that that jump is probably across the Atlantic. It's probably about 80 milliseconds to cross the Atlantic, and so I think that's what that is. And you can see there I get down to this network node here. I don't know what this one is, WAS. It might be in Washington State or something. And then I get to an IP address here, and then it times out. Now, SharePoint Online does not actually respond to ICMP packets on the SharePoint servers. And so as a result of that, you see this request timed out. So I'm not actually seeing the ping go all the way to the SharePoint Online server, but I'm seeing it right up to just before that, which could help me to understand that. Looking at the comparison to our location for Outlook to Exchange, when Outlook connects to Exchange, it's going to try and connect to outlook.office365.com, And because we are because we're in Europe, it's going to get DNS back for outlook-emeasouth.office365.com. So it's going to be connecting to an Exchange Cafe server in Amsterdam there. Even though my mailbox might be in the United States, it's still going to connect to that close-by server and then make use of our DC to DC connectivity for any back-end hot TCP connections that it might need. So you can see that this is going to ams.-96c on ntwk.msn.net. So you can see that's on the Microsoft network. It's obviously still in Europe because we've got that 34 millisecond ping time there. If, however, I had the situation that we were talking about earlier, and I had done this from a VPN where my DNS was coming back from APAC, you might get something like this. Here I'm doing traceroute, and I've actually keyed it in instead of setting up VPN and doing all that, but this could happen with a VPN where you're connecting unexpectedly to, and this is going to be APAC North, so this is going to be our data center in Hong Kong. So you can see a very big difference here where the network routing goes. And if I was seeing this, I know my tenant should be connecting in Europe and it should be doing that, and I'm actually routing packets. You can see NYC, New York City there. I'm going across the Atlantic and all this crazy stuff. Commonly, if you see that, it is because an ISP has very, very cheap routing for data connecting out of the country. And so many ISPs will have a default route where they pay to have traffic that goes to one location. And if you get caught up in that default route, you may find your data goes to the wrong country before it comes back and connects onto the Microsoft network. So that's a great time to have a conversation with that ISP. If you're using the VPN thing, there are other configuration things that you have to look for. But you can get a surprising amount of information from the network. Obviously, it's a long way back down to Hong Kong from here. You can get a surprising amount of information from the network by taking a look at that traceroute there. All right. So I appreciate I'm running a bit low on time here. I have a slide here just talking about making sure that you're on the latest versions of our client software. I want to call out that the Office 365 Pro Plus, which is the Office version of Office Client that you get with something like an E3 subscription for Office 365, which downloads from our service, it needs to be only up to 12 months out of date. You can block its updates for up to 12 months. You can't have it more out of date than that. By keeping on those latest clients, you allow us to improve performance, and you get to take advantage of performance improvements that we make with those clients. All right. So I did mention about using cached exchange mode here. I've actually got a slide here showing a graphic on it. I did mention about this Exchange Client Performance Analyzer. So I'll show you this real quick. This is just a simple tool that runs on your PC, and you can click Run Now and it'll go away and run some tests in the background. This is downloadable from the Office 365 admin console, and then it'll give you some tests here. It'll tell you what your ISP is, and it'll tell you what kind of connectivity you have. It also does a trace route to a couple of services in the Microsoft data centers to understand how your connectivity is going. And it does upload that data anonymously to Office 365 as well. If you are working with a support agent with Microsoft, you can give them this GUID, and they will be able to go and look up that data. That's the only ticket that we have against that data if you're running this tool. It doesn't show who has actually run it. But that's a useful tool if you're working with Office 365 support teams. All right. We do also have a tool for troubleshooting Link Online specifically. I'm just running through these tools quickly because they are not in the talk tomorrow. The Link Online troubleshooting tool is based on Java. You need to go and install Java, and you've got to go into the Java control panel and add this as a trusted site. But it gives you a wealth of information that comes back. Speaking of a wealth of information, these are some of the troubleshooting tests that we're going to be looking at in the morning. The speaker for that is Paul Collins, so it's at 10:15 in room D4. We actually have another talk tomorrow morning at 8:30 a.m. on performance troubleshooting. This one specifically is about troubleshooting customized SharePoint Online sites. Now, the way you can tell if you need to do this is if you have a slow SharePoint Online site which has been customized, and you go to OneDrive for Business on the same tenant, and that page loads fast. If your OneDrive for Business page loads fast, but your customized site loads slow, then you want to go to this talk. And actually, we've been publishing some of the same guidance at aka.ms/tune, that same website, about how you can look for issues that may be caused by some types of customization. Great talk tomorrow morning, 8:30 a.m., a little bit early. Hope to see you there. So just in summary, some things that you can do to improve the performance of your connectivity to Office 365. Real easy things: upgrading to the latest browsers, upgrading the version of Office 365 Pro Plus, use the rich clients with offline sync and cached mode, use hybrid scenarios where some of your data is on premises, some of it is online, make sure that your DNS is up to scratch, call up your ISP if you think there are issues with routing between your network and Microsoft, the Microsoft network, and please provide the feedback to Microsoft and let us know how we're doing about this. All right, so we've got a couple of these sessions to reference. Here's my URLs. I've really got the URLs in here so that when you guys download the deck, you'll be able to grab those afterwards. I know the Ask the Experts is coming up right now. It's a bit gratuitous putting that on the slide. Sorry about that. Some other things they wanted me to tell you about. We have a tech network that a bunch of us from the product teams are part of and that you can join. It is a Yammer network. And then... let's see. Please submit your eval, and the eval, I thought there was a, oh. And then I got another plug for the Ask the Experts. I had a lot of slides after here, don't I? Anyway, so it looks like I've run out of time for questions. I will hang around, though, until they kick me out, and then I'll go down to the Ask the Experts. So thank you very much for coming along. Really appreciate your time and learning about this topic.